Okay, thank you so much. So today I'm going to talk about some work that I've been doing in collaboration with Alfredo Groada, Chris, and Justin. And so let me start with the following two problems in general relativity and high energy physics. So on the one hand, we have the Kerr black hole and perturbations of the Kerr black hole. And we would like to understand how to compute the analytic solutions to the Tucholsky equation in the low energy limit. And in the high energy physics side, we have this appearance of this tower of higher spin particles, you know, being predicted from string theory, or you know, they are also coming from a causality, non-causality violation in higher derivative theories, or you know, the higher spin interacting particles appear as effective description in nature, but you know, they appear, for instance, in QCD as bound states. And because these are effective descriptions, that means that they do not have a well-defined high energy limit. So in this talk, we would like to consider this higher spin interacting particles in the context of gravity. And in particular, we are going to advocate that there is a link between these two problems, and it goes as following. So the claim is that, you know, the Kerr black hole can be identified with a higher spin particle, which is consistently coupled to gravity. So, but how does it work? So we heard from Justin that, you know, we can use a scattering amplitude technique to compute the, you know, several quantities in the two-arc problem. And the reason for that is that at 3 points, you know, the 3-point amplitude, which is basically given by this exponential, it encodes the same information that the linearized Kerr metric. And in particular, this exponential encodes all the spin multiples of the Kerr black hole at a linear order in G. But you know, the matching between this 3-point amplitude and the linearized Kerr metric only holds in 2.2 signature, where you can see radiation modes. But in 3.1 signature, this amplitude is actually zero because of this momentum conserving delta function. And so, but on the one hand, we don't really live in a world which is 2.2 signature, and we know that you know the Kerr black hole perturbations of the Kerr black hole indeed carry radiation modes. And we can have two kinds of perturbations. So for instance, we can have the perturbation of the black hole due to the presence of our black hole, and then there's emission of some, you know, gravitational wave radiation. And this is a problem that has had the attention of the amplitude community and the GR community a lot these days. But it's mostly being considered in the non-spinning case, although there have been some results in the spinning case now. But there is a much simpler type of perturbations, which is the one that we are going to talk about today. And these are just wave perturbations of the Kerr black hole. So imagine we throw a wave of certain helicity to the Kerr black hole. This could be, you know, a scalar wave, a neutrino, electromagnetic, or a gravitational wave. And then the question we want to answer is, you know, what does the 4-point amplitude has to do with the Kerr black hole? So there are some hints from the binary black hole problem that, you know, actually, this amplitude enters in the computation of the scattering angle that Justin was just talking about. But really, there isn't a direct map connecting, you know, this 4-point amplitude and the Kerr black hole itself. And today, we're going to claim that the map should be the following. So since we are interested in computing radiation, then the amplitude should be, you know, matched to an object in the classical theory which has information of radiation. And that object is nothing but the Newman-Penrose scalar, which has radiation in it. And what is the map between the two? Well, considering the following observation. So we know that at Fischer-Null infinity, you know, modes that enter in the Newman-Penrose scalar, which have a 3-momentum aligned with the direction of observation, are the actual modes that contribute to the radiation energy, to the radiation flux. And that means basically that we can identify the momentum of the massless particles with this vector L from the null tetrad. And in the case in which you know, our perturbations of the Kerr black hole have some spin, then we can identify the polarization vector with this M and M bar vector from the null tetrad. And then the on-shell condition for the massless particles just basically follows from the, you know, the null conditions from the vectors in the null tetrad, and the same with these other kind of products. So, but you know, this map that I'm proposing here, it looks on the one hand, the amplitudes are quantum objects. So we still need to provide a way of taking the classical limit of those quantum objects. And on the other hand, this map that I'm proposing is written in a non-perturbative fashion. So that means that, you know, we still need to provide additional elements to really, you know, make the map explicitly. So what additional elements do we need to provide? Well, we need to, since, you know, the scattering amplitude description of the Kerr black hole is an effective description, that means that we need to provide a way of taking the low energy limit both from the amplitude sides and from the classical computation in the solutions of the Tucholsky equation. And also because we don't really know how to compute the scattering amplitudes to all orders in G, then we need to provide a way of making, you know, this post-Mikonskian expansion that Justin was talking about for both the amplitudes and the black hole perturbation theory computation. And how is it done in practice? Well, let me illustrate that with a simple example. And the simplest example we can consider is, you know, the scattering of a scalar wave of the Schwarzschild black hole. You know, let's forget about the spin for a moment. And, you know, basically, classically, what we would have to solve is the massless Klein-Gordon equation, you know, and then we can go to, you know, asymptotic flat region, and then use some gauge condition and do separation of the, you know, the time evolution for the perturbation, and rewrite the Klein-Gordon equation in a more familiar form from quantum mechanics, which is basically like a Schrodinger type of equation. So this h mu nu, d mu, d nu is acting like a potential in the Schrodinger equation. And then that means that we can really easily solve this problem, because what we have to do is just expand the total wave as a superposition of an incoming plane wave and a scatter wave. And now to take the low energy limit, what we do is we replace this back in the limit in which the wavelength of the perturbation is much bigger than the size of the black hole, which in quantum mechanics is nothing but the Born approximation. And then we can separate the scatter and the incoming contributions. And then as R goes to infinity, then we can define the scattering amplitude as the ratio between the scatter wave and the incoming wave. And this isn't given by nothing but this Fourier transform. And, you know, it led us to a known object in QFT, because it's nothing but, you know, the amplitude for the scattering of a massive particle, which is represented here by the Schwarzschild metric, and here we have the, you know, the scattering the contribution from a massless particle, which is the 3-point vertex is this k mu k nu, and this coming from the kinetic term in the QFT Lagrangian for the massless particle. So in this way, that's how, you know, scattering amplitudes, well, it's not the full QFT scattering amplitude, but, you know, this is a field theory scattering amplitude arise from classical computation. And, you know, the same holds true in more complicated scenarios. So what kind of lesson we learn from this simple example? So we learned that the expansion in powers of, you know, GM much omega much smaller than one accounts for two things. So on the one hand, it accounts for the low energy limit. And on the other hand, it also accounts for the perturbative expansion, meaning the expansions in powers of G. But, you know, if we solve this problem, you know, doing a pure, you know, scattering amplitude computation, there are going to be corrections, that quantum correction that arise in the scattering amplitude that enters in the form of, you know, omega divided by m, or, you know, 1 over r times m, where r is, you know, like some kind of impact parameter. And then to drop this correction from the amplitude, we just rescale the frequency of the perturbation with h bar and the impact parameter with the inverse of h bar, and then take, you know, the limit in which h bar goes to zero, and that drops all of the quantum contributions to the scattering amplitude. So in a pure QFT language, that is, you know, equivalent to do a multiple soft expansion where, you know, all of the momenta of the massless particle is soft. So
you have 3 minutes left.
Okay, so in more complicated scenarios, we'll have to solve the Reggie-Wheeler equation or the Tucholsky equation. And, you know, if we solve the Tucholsky equation, then we'll have to solve for all of these functions entering in the Newman-Penrose scalar. So we have to solve for the radial Tikhovsky equation, and we have to, you know, put the spin weighted spheroidal harmonics, you know. And, you know, first of all, we could take the low energy limit when solving the Tikhovsky equation, but, you know, there are additional dimensionless combinations that enter in the game. For instance, the combination A times omega, and we can find solutions in powers of A times omega, but unlike for the case of the Schwarzschild black hole, you know, the expansion in you know, this epsilon parameter does not take full care of the perturbative expansion. And that's because, you know, there can be additional combinations with this A star, which is the ratio between set and epsilon, which are not touched by the low energy expansion. So, when one does black hole perturbation theory, one assumes that this number is smaller than one, but, you know, in order to extract the, you know, just the three level contribution to the scattering angle, we have to analytically continue this A star parameter to infinity, or basically, you know, taking the limit in which this G goes to zero. So this breakdown, the black hole perturbation theory, and what it does is effectively erases the horizon of the black hole and leaves us with a naked singularity. You know, but that is fine because, you know, the amplitude itself is not supposed to, you know, it's supposed to be an effective description of the black hole. And, you know, the amplitude itself cannot see the horizon of the black hole. So in the amplitude size, as I said, we rescale the frequency, the frequency with H bar, but in order to keep this number A times omega of order one, we also have to rescale the spin of the black hole with H bar. So in particular, we have to consider the Kerr black hole is gonna be a particle with infinite spin. But you know, once we introduce all these simplifications in the game, we can now compare the two, you know, compare the amplitude computation and the find a black hole perturbation theory computation. But you know, there is a difficulty, and is that in the classical side, we still have this infinite sum of harmonics that we can do. And that sum is, in many cases, almost infinite, impossible to do. You know, but you know, we can be a bit more clever than that and say, you know, let's just don't do that sum, and instead we can expand this left-hand side in a basis of the spheroidal harmonics, and then compare mode by mode. So to close my talk, let me just summarize some lessons that we learned from doing this match using this all of these approximations that I just talked about. So for instance, if you consider the scattering of you know, waves of helicity smaller than two, then from the amplitude's point of view, what you would just have to do is do a simple one Feynman diagram computation. And that's gonna resonate all of these you know, infinite sum of harmonics from the Tikhovsky computation. But if you consider the scattering of gravitational waves, you have to consider three additional diagrams that are the ones that are gonna form the full quantum scattering amplitude. There is also something interesting is that, you know, when you throw waves of different helicity towards the Kerr black hole, they scatter by different scattering angles. So in particular, that means that if you send that, say, a beam of unpolarized, you know, light, for instance, or gravitational waves, then you're gonna end up with polarized waves after the scattering process. And that polarization can be, you know, quantified and, you know, from the computation of the scattering amplitude. And say, for instance, if you take the limit in which the scattering angle is very small, that reduces to a very simple function, and, you know, it's basically proportional to the helicity of the wave that you're sending here. However, this pattern does not hold when you throw gravitational waves towards the Kerr black hole. So naively, you might think, okay, you for gravitational wave, you expect a number a two here. And that would be the case if you only consider the graviton exchange diagram here in the computation of the gravitational wave scattering, as it was done by these two authors back in 2005. But you know, actually, if we include the additional diagram, we see the full agreement with the black hole perturbation theory result. And you know, we can ask, okay, how are these amplitudes consistent? You know, are they unitarity? Do they respect unitarity and causality? And the answer is yes. And they also have a well-defined high energy limit. And you know, in the cases in which we know how to compute the scattering amplitudes from QFT, there is a perfect match between the amplitude side and the black hole perturbation theory side. And for higher spin, this is going to give us, you know, new building blocks to compute, for instance, the scattering angle that Justin was talking about in his talk, to higher spin in the black hole. And, you know, last but, you know, not least, you know, these scattering amplitudes are like a very nice way of, you know, do these infinite sums in the appearing in the black hole perturbation theory. And to get some flavor of what this amplitude look like, you know, if you throw a scattering a gravitational wave to the Kerr black hole, then you just get these very simple functions of the spin of the black hole. You know, you don't have this infinite sum of harmonics. And with that, let me just thank you for your attention.